He administered justice and righteousness. Oh, that we have leaders that administer justice and righteousness. You see, David's reign is with justice and righteousness. I think it's pointing to David as a type of Jesus Christ, because in Psalm 89:14, isn't that God's reign? It says, righteousness and justice are the foundation of thy throne. Loving kindness and truth go before thee. You see, that's the reign of the Lord.
As we gather, may your spirit work within us. As we gather, may we glorify your name. Knowing well that as our hearts begin to worship, we'll be blessed because we came. We'll be blessed because we came.
Aloha kakou e komo mai. Welcome to As We Gather, the Bible teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel Honolulu with Pastor Bill Stonebreaker. Today, Pastor Bill continues in 2 Samuel chapters 8 through 10.
We'll be blessed because we came. Yeah, we'll be blessed because.
We remember that David has brought up the Ark of the Covenant to Jerusalem. It's been a successful journey, a little bit of problems on the way, but he finally has got the Ark into Jerusalem. David is just relaxing, enjoying the presence of the Lord, the Ark representing God's presence. And then he looks around at his own house, and he lives really in the lap of luxury. He lives in a beautiful cedar house, and he said, you know, I live in this wonderful house. But God, he's in a tent, in the ark is in a tent. And he says, I'm going to build God a house. Nathan says, do all that is in your heart, David. And later God gets a hold of Nathan and says, Nathan, you spoke basically out of turn. You should have prayed and you should have gotten my mind on what you said to David. But I want you to go back and tell David that he can't build me a house. He's a man of war. He's a man of blood. But I'm going to build a house for him. And it's going to be an enduring house. And God was talking about David's prodigy, how the Messiah is going to come through the line of David. And that's the house that he was going to build. The Messiah would come through David. And then we do know that God did build that house through Solomon, David's son. And David collected the material for that house. But we end there. And David is just overwhelmed. He talks about how, you know, he was brought up from the sheep, you know, just guarding sheep, and now how God has done such an incredible work in David's life, and he's not deserving of it. And just a wonderful, humble kind of praise to God for God giving him that message and giving him that great work that he's going to do through David. Then he goes on, and now David goes to war, the very thing that God said, now you can't build me a house because you're a man of war. But what is happening here is Israel had a constant enemy. He had the Ammonites, he had the Amorites, he had the Philistines, he had a lot of enemies. And so David went after the enemies and conquered different territories and made peace. And a lot of these enemies made peace with David. And so that's what he's doing. And basically, David is fulfilling that prophecy that God gave to Abraham. Remember when God said, Abraham, wherever you put your foot, that will be your territory. He said, in fact, look to the north, look to the south, look to the east and to the west. Everywhere you look will be your territory. And now, although Abraham did not conquer that territory, we're finding that David is going out. And he is conquering those lands that God had prophesied to Abraham. And so we find in chapter 8 of 2 Samuel, now after this, it came about that David defeated the Philistines and subdued them, and David took control of the chief city from the hand of the Philistines. And he defeated Moab and measured them with a line, making them lie down on the ground. And he measured two lines to put to death and one full line to keep alive. And the Moabites became servants to David, bringing tribute. So here the battle begins. The Philistines, they lived in this area of this coastal area. Actually, the Arabs have control of a lot of that area now. When you look at Gaza and Ascalon and the West Bank and toward the coast, it's toward the coast of the Mediterranean in the south. And they were a constant thorn in the flesh of Israel, constantly threatening Israel and a threat to Israel. Moab, the same. And Moab, remember the Moabites, they came from Moab, who was the son of an incestuous relationship between Lot and his oldest daughter. Well, you can read the story on your own. It's in Genesis chapter 19, verse 36, to be specific. But there's where the Moabites came from. They were a product of the flesh. And so they also were in warfare and hassling and fighting against Israel. Now, when it talks about they measured the line, one line and two line, and he laid the people on the ground, a couple different thoughts here by commentators and those that that look at these things. One is that David actually put to death two-thirds of the army. So the two lines he destroyed, the one line he left alive. So he decimated basically their army. That's one idea. The second idea is he laid a line and then put the people down, and then he laid two lines and put the people down. The one line would be the young. They weren't very tall, and he left them alive. In other words, he left the youngsters alive. But those that were old that would measure up to two lines, he put them to death. Whatever it is, I'm not exactly sure of this, what it is, but nonetheless, he did decimate the army and to the point where they now made tribute, they now became servants of David. And then it goes on, verse 3, and David defeated Hadadezer, the son of Rahab, the king of Zobah, and he went to restore his rule at the river. And David captured from him 1,700 horsemen and 20,000 foot soldiers. And David hamstrung the chariot horses, but reserved enough of them for 100 chariots. And when the Arameans of Damascus came to help Hadadezer, King David, or the king of Zobah, David killed 22,000 Arameans. Now, let me make a point here. The Arameans, that's the Hebrew word for the Syrians. Notice they're in the area of Damascus. The English word is Syria. So when you read of the Syrians or Syria, it's the same as the Arameans from Aram, those in Syria. That's what he's talking about. They're still enemies of the Lord. Then David put a garrison among the Arameans of Damascus, and the Arameans became servants of David, bringing tribute. And the Lord helped David wherever he went. Verse 7, and David took the shields of gold, which were carried by the servants of Hadadezer, and brought them to Jerusalem and from Betha and from Berathai, cities of Hadadezer. King David took very large amounts of bronze. Now, this is the northern enemies that David is dealing with at this point. He's already dealt with the southern enemies of Israel. And you can find it in 1 Samuel 30. When we were there, we dealt with those southern enemies. Hadadezer, here's a man that is basically, it's the name of his god. And it's a Canaanite god. It's the storm god is my help. That's what his name means. He's adopting the name of a false pagan god, and he's saying this storm god is my help. That's Hadadezer. And he's the ruler there of Syria, of the Syrians or the Armenians, king of Zobah. That's an area. Now, when it says that David hamstrung the horses, it's talking about cutting the back sinew of the hind legs of the horse to disable them for war. Doesn't kill them, but it just makes them unable to go out to battle. I mean, they can graze in the field, they can still mate and that kind of thing, but he's destroying the ability for military activity. So what does that mean? Well, remember when the prophecy was given to those that would be a king in Israel in Deuteronomy 17, not to multiply horses, which would also include chariots, because remember, David is keeping 100 horses for 100 chariots, to go out to war. That would be like a tank, you know, in our day and age. But so he's hamstringing some so that they can't go out to war, not to multiply wives and not to multiply gold and silver. Now, it seems like David is multiplying gold and silver, but he's doing it to furnish the temple. So that's what he's doing it for. His son Solomon, he went over the top on that. I mean, he totally violated that because he multiplied gold and silver to himself, and it was really to himself. David is doing it to build the temple. So it seems as though David's following this partially. He's not multiplying horses. In fact, he's hamstringing the horses because the horse was a military prowess, and especially with chariots. And God didn't want them to trust in their military prowess or trust in horses or chariots, but they wanted them to trust in the Lord. That's why he said, don't multiply those to yourself. And wives, because wives will steer your heart away from the Lord, and yet David did have how many wives? It was almost a dozen wives. I think I'd have to count again. I know he had 8 at least. And then he had a lot of concubines. But we don't see him multiplying to himself the silver and gold. He did that for the temple. And so he's partially obeying this. Now, in Damascus, notice he set up these garrisons in Damascus. So it would be like leaving soldiers in a city so that the enemy wouldn't overrun that city again. And so Damascus, very strategic city, because it was located on the crossroads of two main international highways. And we've been to these highways. We've seen these on our trips to Israel. Not every trip, but we've seen actually the ancient ruins of these highways. You can still see partially the highway, the Via Maris, which going south and west to Egypt, and the King's Highway, leading east of the Jordan River and going south to Arabia. So this was at the crossroads, very strategic city. So it was an important city to have his garrisons there. And notice when it talks about the shields in verse 7, shields of gold, they carried and they brought them to Jerusalem. Now these shields were not for fighting. They weren't shields for battle. They were trophies. They were decorations of war. You might say war memorials or war insignias. Not used in battle, but they were decorations and they would commemorate the victories that you had. And so that's what they're doing. They're setting those up in these areas to commemorate the victory. Verse 9, it says, now when Toi, king of Hamath, heard that David had defeated all the army of Hadadezer, Toi sent Joram, his son, to King David to greet him and bless him because he had fought against Hadadezer and defeated him. For Hadadezer had been at war with Toi, and Joram brought with him articles of silver and gold and bronze. King David also dedicated these to the Lord with the silver and the gold that he had dedicated from all the nations which he had subdued, from Aram and Moab and the sons of Ammon, and from the Philistines and Amalek and the spoils of Hadadezer, son of Rahab, king of Zobah. So these were dedicated to the Lord. This wasn't for David. And we know that there was a lot of gold and silver and bronze used in building the temple and making the utensils for the temple. And so very important. But now, what we're seeing here from verses 9 to 12 is Hamath, a Syrian or Aramean territory. It was about 100 miles north of Damascus. And King Toi, he sends gifts to David, and he sends them by the hand of his son, which was a very honorable thing to do. A king wouldn't normally go and meet another king with these gifts, not normally, but they would send the highest representative of that king, and there's none higher than his son. So he sends his son with basically peace offerings, offerings of friendship, and offerings of submission. He's basically saying, I will be a vassal to you. I will be under your authority, David, and whatever tribute I could give to you, I will. And here's token of that. So he's really making peace. And so the gold and silver that he gave them, and as I mentioned later, to be used in the temple. And then it goes on, verse 13. So David made a name for himself when he returned from killing 18,000 Arameans in the Valley of Salt, and he put garrisons in Edom, in all Edom, and he put garrisons in all the Edomites, and they became servants to David, and the Lord helped David wherever he went. So David reigned over all Israel, and David administered justice and righteousness for all his people. And Joab, the son of Zeruiah, was over the army, and Jehoshaphat, the son of Ahilud, was recorder, and Zadok, the son of Ahitub, and Amalek, the son of Abiathar, were priests, and Seraiah was secretary, and Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was over the Cherethites and the Peliathites, and David's sons were chief ministers. So here he's basically got his cabinet. He's got those that are going to administrate the kingdom for him. And so what we have here is the fulfillment. Notice it says that David made a name for himself. Now, remember in chapter 7, verse 9, where it said, I have been with you. God said, I have been with you wherever you have gone and have cut off your enemy from before you, and I will make you a great name like the names of the great men who are on the earth. You see, God gave him that promise. He didn't have that promise at that time. But now notice, as you look back, you see that God fulfilled that. He did make him a great name. He gave him a great reputation. That's always true. When God gives us a promise and we just simply walk with the Lord, we do His will, we wait upon the Lord, we look back in time and we see, wow, God has fulfilled. He has fulfilled great things, wonderful things. You see, he did that with David, his reputation. And now it talks about his rulership. He ruled from the Gulf of Aqaba. You can find that way down in the south. And the river Egypt to the Euphrates. And it's basically, he's beginning to rule in those territories that God had promised to Abraham. And so you see that. And one of the things that is noteworthy in verse 15 is that his reign over Israel, he administered justice and righteousness. Oh, that we might have leaders that administer justice and righteousness. Oh, how our country is hurting for that. And you know, I think we need to pray as a church, as a body, as individuals for that. I think one of the reasons we see that not happening is maybe the church is just slumbering, they're sleeping. You know, Jesus told the disciples, he said, pray with me for 1 hour that you might not enter into temptation. I think the church has entered into the temptation, and I think the result of that is the kind of rulers that we have. I was just talking with Danny Lehman today, and I think one of the things that we will be dealing with as a church and in seeking to preach the gospel and seeking to win the lost to Christ is talking about the sin of homosexuality. It's a very sensitive issue, and it seems like it's a tidal wave in America now that if you speak out against it, they will label you a lot of nasty names. But you see, it's no different than maybe speaking out against adultery. You know, you can speak out against adultery, and there's not a tidal wave of criticism over that. But you see, I think Satan is going to be using that issue in the church and trying to silence a lot of Christians and even the church compromising and now almost endorsing that kind of lifestyle. Because what is being said now, well, that was really just for Paul's day. That's not for our day. Because you see, in Paul's day, he addressed slavery. And now we don't have to deal with slavery today, and that was just an issue back then. But now, today, this is just a common thing where you've got to love people and let them have, their choice. And, if they choose that lifestyle, then you've got to embrace them. And so what happens now, the church just kind of skates over that. And that's kind of the leaven that comes into the church. And so I think, there's going to be that primarily because our government has not, really reigned and ruled in justice and righteousness. And the church hasn't prayed. The church hasn't stood up for what is right and what is moral. And so I think we're gonna have to deal with that in a sense of persecution. Now, I don't know how bad that would get. I don't know if Christians would be jailed for speaking out on it or just silenced and say, you can't do it. Take away your tax-exempt status, take away your radio frequencies, so you can't do that. They call it hate speech and that kind of thing. But folks, that's what happens when the unrighteous rule over the righteous. When pure waters are trampled, and now they're polluted. You see, David's reign is with justice and righteousness. I think it's pointing to David as a type of Jesus Christ. Because in Psalm 89:14, isn't that God's reign? It says, righteousness and justice are the foundation of thy throne. Loving kindness and truth go before thee. You see, that's the reign of the Lord.
And that's where we'll finish on today's edition of As We Gather with Pastor Bill Stonebreaker. This was a portion of a weekly Bible study from the book of 2 Samuel, chapters 8 through 10. You can hear this message again by visiting CalvaryChapelHonolulu.com and take advantage of our media archive. We really appreciate any support from our listeners. Your encouragement and prayer go a long way for this ministry. If you'd like to support the As We Gather media ministry, you can give securely online at CalvaryChapelHonolulu.com. And for those who would like to be a regular sponsor, you can set up a recurring gift on the schedule of your choice. May the Lord richly bless you as you walk with Him today.
Gather me, we glorify your name, knowing well that as our hearts begin to worship, we'll be blessed because we came. We'll be blessed because we came. As we gather, may your Spirit work within us. As we gather, may we glorify your name, knowing well that as our hearts begin to worship, we'll be blessed because we came. Yeah, we'll be blessed because we came. As we gather, may your Spirit work within. As we gather, may we glorify your name, knowing well that as our hearts begin to worship, we'll be blessed because we came. Yeah, yeah, we'll be blessed because we came.
Next time on As We Gather, we'll continue in 2 Samuel chapters 8 through 10. Until then, aloha and agape.
We'll be blessed because we came. We'll be blessed because we came. Yeah, we'll be blessed because we came.